In today's fast-paced digital world, the concept of dopamine detoxing has gained a lot of traction as a method to reset our brains from the constant stimulation. But what exactly is dopamine detoxing, and does it hold any scientific merit? Today, we're going to dive into the science behind dopamine. I'm going to debunk those myths surrounding dopamine detoxing. I'm going to also explore how modern motivations really hijack your brain's reward system. And then, of course, I'm going to give you actionable strategies to recalibrate your relationship with dopamine and your world so you can feel more peaceful, serene, and content. So stay tuned. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, and I'm a practicing psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven with over 35 years of experience helping people just like you. Join me as I teach you actionable tips and strategies to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. Wonderful to have you here. You know who I am, and this is a good one today. This question actually came from within my One Love Collective, my Patreon online community. And as I promised, that community is going to get, they're going to get, you know, to have their things go to the top of the queue. We're really building a great place there. I hope you come join us. But if you don't, you're still going to get all the great things I always promise right here. So let's get into understanding dopamine. Let's go there first, right? You got to know that before we can go any farther. And so dopamine is a really, you know, you've heard of it because it's such a hardworking neurotransmitter. And what are neurotransmitters? They're your brain's chemical messengers. You've got a lot of them. You've heard of them usually, serotonin, dopamine, endorphins, and enkephalins. There's tons of good ones. I think there's about 100 neurotransmitters at this point that have been identified. There's probably 20 that you think about, you know, GABA, other ones in any sort of daily way. Always remember that some things like dopamine can be both a neurotransmitter and a hormone, depending on where they are acting. When there's chemical messengers in the brain, acting in the brain, we call them neurotransmitters. When they're in the body, we call them hormones. Kind of the same thing though. And why have you heard of dopamine? Because it's known as one of the sort of feel-good neurotransmitters, but that description greatly oversimplifies and misses the mark when it comes to dopamine and how important it is to you. So dopamine is front and center because it plays such a huge role in your motivation, your reward system, learning, your mood, your attention, your energy. I know it governs your anticipation and pursuit of rewards. It, not necessarily the enjoyment of them. We'll get into that, but I want you to think of dopamine as the driver that pushes you to act, whether that's, you know, reaching for your phone, eating a cookie, finishing a work project. Dopamine is that girl, is that one right there. And this, you know, again, really powerful chemical helps reinforce behaviors that are evolutionarily beneficial, okay? So anything that's evolutionarily, is that a word? I'm making it a word. Beneficial, like eating, sex, social interaction, any of the things that would have helped your ancestors live, dopamine's involved, trust me, in some way. So, and that would be fine if it were thousands of years ago, but today's modern world offers just constant artificial dopamine triggers, right? Likes on Instagram, internet porn, processed snacks, online shopping, video games, you name it. They're so easy access, they're high reward activities, and they really dysregulate your brain's reward system. When we say dysregulate, that word means that when things are regulated is when you're in your best place, right? If you're pooping regularly, it feels good, doesn't it? Yeah, it's really nice. But when you're dysregulated, that would mean that you are constipated or having diarrhea or something that isn't part of the regular way that you're supposed to, quote unquote, function, okay? So when we use that word dysregulation, I've had some people write in about it, like, what does that mean? There's always good to ask those questions. I'm glad you do. But that's what we're talking about. So dysregulation is that's the worst thing you want. That's at the bottom of the list of wants. Anything when it's dysregulated means it's out of sync, it's not working correctly, and we don't like it. So when dopamine is dysregulated, it really encourages you to prioritize instant gratification over, you know, your long-term goals, the things that are meaningful to you. So you're going to feel pulled to do the things you shouldn't instead of the things you think you should. And then you're going to wonder why it's so hard to stay motivated towards your goals. I know. So believe it or not, you know, playing games on your phone nonstop or just looking at your phone nonstop is making it harder for you to reach your goals. And so we're going to talk about that today. And again, what's true and what's not true about it. So there's a lot of misconceptions of dopamine detoxing, this thing that I keep hearing about. I see it on TikTok and other places. And there's a lot of misconceptions, which I don't like. So we're going to write those today. And again, tell you what to do. So the idea of detoxing from dopamine it's fundamentally flawed, okay? It's incorrect. You can't detox from dopamine the way I could, you know, when I detox from heroin, you know, I don't do that anymore. It's not in my system anywhere. You can detox from alcohol, from cocaine, right? Because you can't do it from dopamine because dopamine is essential for your brain to function. You have to have dopamine. The confusion really, I think, stems from a behavioral technique that was introduced by a psychiatrist named Dr. Cameron, I want to say Sepa, S-E-P-A-H. And this is no shade to Dr. Sepa. He had this concept of, and again, I'll link to all the research and all that, as I always do, on the website, abbymetcalf.com, under the Relationship Tips and Tools page, and I'll link to it on the show notes page. So you can go anywhere on the website where this episode is and find it. And if you're looking at watching me on YouTube, please like and subscribe, leave a comment, and below the video, you'll find everything. So, and anything I talk about as giveaways or anything else will all be in those places. So again, no shade to Dr. Sepa. I don't know how to say that. But his concept of dopamine fasting was never about reducing dopamine itself, but about sort of temporarily abstaining from any of the really overstimulating activities that happened for dopamine so you could regain control of compulsive behaviors. That's what that was meant to do. And I think his stuff got twisted. So unfortunately, right, the internet twists and subverts and, you know, this practical behavioral reset into these kind of extreme, I think, absurd rituals. You know, I've heard things like sitting in silence for hours. You know, we've got raw dogging it on the airplane on a transcontinental flight, you know, meaning that you just sit there staring off into space for 10 hours. Like, okay, you could, but or, you know, avoiding contact, eye contact. I've seen that one as a means of dopamine detoxing. Not engaging in any pleasurable activities at all. You know, as if dopamine were some kind of toxin that you had to purge. Where in reality, the goal is to become more mindful of your habits and regain balance. Not to live without joy or stimulation or an Oreo cookie, which, you know, I love my Oreos. Yeah. I do. I won't live without those. Right? So that's not our goal. So this idea when I hear dopamine detox, I think that there's like when people think of detoxing from sugar, it's just this horrible, who wants to do it? You know, I don't want to do it. I love my sugar. So not that it's not healthy to do sometimes, but you know what I mean? Like we get into this really negative space. And that's not how I want you to think of this. So let me talk first about kind of the science of this newer, relatively new, as far as humans go, kind of dopamine environment. Let's talk about that before we jump further. You know, one of the reasons modern life feels so overstimulating is that our brains are exposed to a level of dopamine triggering stimuli that would have been unthinkable even 100 years ago. Okay, even just 100 years ago. So our ancestors experienced dopamine surges in response to really rare, relatively rare biologically relevant events, okay? Like finding food. Trust me, there wasn't a McDonald's on every corner for our ancestors, right? So, you know, finding food was like, yes, of course, dopamine would have to be triggered with that because it was such a life-affirming thing. But you weren't always finding food. If you were hunting, I love this show, what is it called? Life Below Zero. I don't know if you've watched this. It's about these people, indigenous people, but also people who have moved to Alaska, okay, here in the United States. And there's a lot of subsistence living, what we would call subsistence living, where people are literally going out every day and like finding food for that day, bringing in water for that day or for the next couple days or few days, right? It's really, and so they're not, every time they go to hunt, and I love watching the show because of the spirit of the people who live there, because they know that of every hunting trip they go out on, they're going to miss most of the time. They're not going to get something most of the time. But some of the times they are, of course, that's how they stay alive. And they really have just, there's no depression when they don't, you know, they're not happy that they didn't kill the caribou or, you know, get snare a rabbit that time, but they're not so overwhelmed and like, oh my God, it's never going to happen. It's horrible. My life sucks. It's all over. These are people who really understand, who aren't, these are people who don't need a dopamine detox. I'll tell you that right now, because they are really living much closer to how we are biologically made to live. I don't get any money, by the way, from the Life Below Zero, the Alaska show, but you should try to sponsor me. I'm just saying anyway, because I love you. All right. I think it's on the National Geographic Channel. So I don't know where or where you probably could stream it on many of them, but ways you can stream. If you haven't seen it, I think it's a beautiful, positive show. I really do, even though that's not kind of what it's built for. But anyway, so they get, so dopamine, rare, right? It's a rare sort of occurrence. You know, finding food, securing social connection will also bring you dopamine, escaping danger. Okay. But again, all these things were more rare 100 years ago, 200 years ago, a million years ago. I mean, than they are now, which is what's so crazy. So today, you know, we can experience those same surges every few minutes, thanks to technology, to mass consumerism, to DoorDash, right? And that's what we're not built for. So in studies, and again, whenever I say studies or research, it's all on my website, okay? Go, it's all linked in this episode. Studies have found that modern activities like social media use, processed food consumption, binge watching content, that all these things activate the what's called the mesolimbic dopamine system at levels that are comparable to those activated by drugs of abuse. Okay, to a lesser degree, but still. Okay, Yeah, let that sink in for a minute. It's the sheer frequency and intensity of those activations that make them so problematic. When dopamine spikes become a regular part of our daily life, our brain adapts. It adapts by downregulating dopamine receptors. And so what does that mean? What does that mean, Abby? Downregulating dopamine receptors. It means that over time, we require more stimulation to feel the same sense of reward, okay? Which is, that phenomenon is known as tolerance. It's the same thing as if I was a drinker and I needed more alcohol to get the same effect I used to get, okay? From one drink, now I need five drinks. It's the same thing. It's tolerance. It's acting on a lot of those same neural pathways. So this is why you might find yourself watching more videos, eating more sugar, spending more money, just to feel normal, okay? Just to feel normal. And I want it this, and here's the scary part. These changes aren't just psychological. They're structural. Yeah, I'm going to say that. You heard that right. You're actually changing the real estate of your brain with these activities. This is what neuroplasticity looks like for the good of it and the bad of it in your brain. Brain imaging studies show that consistent overstimulation reshapes your neural pathways And it starts to prioritize short-term rewards over long-term thinking. So it would be the opposite of my beautiful people in Alaska who are living in this sort of subsistence way where they are all about the long-term rewards. They're not even looking at, there are no short-term rewards. So everything they do is put into place in over months or a year or years even. Or weeks or days or hours. Nothing is put into play like I'm going to get this in the next minute or the next 10 minutes or the next hour. It just doesn't work that way. So this is why it's harder than ever for us regular folk who live in a more quote unquote modern world the world that most of us live in. It's harder than ever to focus, to be patient, to enjoy the simple things because of our baseline for stimulation has been unnaturally elevated. So a walk in nature or a quiet conversation might have been deeply satisfying in, 1925, but in 2025, you're competing with TikTok and Grubhub and dopamine on demand, basically. Okay? Do you see the problem? Are you with me here? Okay. So let me have a sip. Hold on. Gotta stay hydrated. Gotta stay hydrated when I chat. If you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com. So let's talk about the impact of modern stimuli on these dopamine pathways, okay? And so our brains are wired for efficiency and survival. That's what your brain is wired for. So when you repeatedly engage in behaviors that provide quick dopamine hits, our brains learn to crave those actions. And over time, that reinforcement leads to strong neural pathways that favor instant gratification. That's the neuroplasticity of the brain. That's how the brain changes. And when I say brain changes, I mean like, your hippocampus could shrivel, you start to shrink, these pathways between certain stimuli become very, very strong and you can see them in the brain. We're talking like, if you were to look at a map and you saw new roads, very physical things you could see. And that's how the brain starts to look and change. You're building new houses. You're tearing down other houses. If you looked at a community development, you would be able to see all that. You can see that in the brain. It's so crazy, I know. So it's not just, this idea that you're thinking differently. It's that you're actually changing literally the real estate, the structural part of your brain. So committer, that's not a word. Consider, that's a word. Think about how many times a day you unconsciously reach for your phone. Maybe you check texts during meetings or scroll social media in bed or play a mobile game while watching TV. This is something I struggle with, is just sitting. I don't really watch TV often, so I'm usually reading, which I love doing, but when I'm not reading something or engaged in, maybe work on my computer or something or doing something, I often will like play solitaire or something on my phone if I'm sitting with Gary and he's, or maybe we're watching, it's baseball season here, And I love baseball season, but I'm often not just watching the game. I'm often doing something else at like these kind of activities, which is not good. And I'm really trying to practice what I preach and detox myself from those things. And again, these behaviors aren't inherently bad, but they're often automatic and compulsive. And that's what personally I'm trying to change. So because they're reinforcing this shallow, short-term pleasure at the expense of focus, at the expense of creativity, at the expense of deeper relationships. I will have times, I'm telling you, I'll admit it, where Gary's saying something to me and I don't hear it. Or I realize later that I've answered something in a conversation and I was not mindful. I was not there. I almost wake up in a conversation kind of thing because I am distracted in my phone. I am distracted by the game on. I'm not really there with him. Whereas like when we go watch a game live, there's nothing more, there's very few things I like more than watching a lot, you know, beautiful day, warm day, sitting out, you know, watching a live baseball game. It's really, to me, a wonderful thing. And I'm not on my phone at all. I am, and I see people sometimes in the stands and they're on their phone. I'm like, watch the game. Like, what are you doing? It's such a hard thing. And it's because people feel bored. But the reason you're getting bored is because you're doing the stuff on your phone. If you would leave your phone alone for a while, again, you would rewire your brain to enjoy the game, to enjoy sitting with your partner and just connecting. And it doesn't feel that way because you have changed your baseline. You have changed that. So the good news is you can change it back, but you need to realize you've changed it. Research, it shows consistently that chronic overstimulation, which is what you're doing, of your brain's reward circuitry, it leads to attention problems. It leads to emotional dysregulation. What do I mean by that? That dysregulation that you get, maybe you scream and yell, maybe you get angry, maybe you start crying. Your emotions are not regulated. You are not in charge of them. It leads to anxiety. I'm sure have noticed symptoms resembling addiction when it comes to your phone. I have seen people, take away a kid's phone or something, and the kid is like screaming and like bloody murder. That's addiction. You know, that's a problem. And it's not just kids. I see adults do it too. Dopamine itself isn't the problem. It's how we engage with all these things that artificially hijack our system. That's, I want to be really clear. Again, ultra processed foods, online gambling, algorithm driven content. So many of our quote unquote like modern experiences are specifically designed to keep us hooked. And that's a big problem. So let me talk about six ways we overstimulate our brain. I'm going to give you six ways we overstimulate our brain before I go into how to fix it, okay? Because I want you to be really clear, because then I'll talk about how to fix those six things, right? Here are the six main areas that I see as the biggest problem when it comes to this. So number one, I'm going to say it to me, what I see is social media. So platforms, you know, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, they're designed to capture and hold your attention. Every like, every comment, every scroll, it delivers a small dopamine reward, training your brain to crave more. And over time, this constant digital feedback loop, we know, again, from the research, leads to anxiety, depression, difficulty concentrating, and definitely can even affect your real-life social connections. It's sort of like when people only watch porn and then try to have sex with a real person, it's going to feel like a letdown. It's not... You know, people aren't entertaining you. You know, women aren't just wet and ready at a moment's notice from glancing at your gorgeousness. You know, that's not what happens. So, you know, and porn gives this idea of something that's not true. Well, the same thing happens if you're watching, you know, TikTok videos, let's say, and I'm not down on TikTok any more than anything else. I want to be really clear. And it's not like I'm not on those platforms. You've seen me there. It's part of our new age. I will say that I have a person who does my social media, so I don't have to be on there all the time. I will, you know, film my videos and do my thing, but I try to stay off of there. I'm not looking to be on social media personally. Because I'm too much of an addict. I will get sucked in and that'll be it for me. So sometimes I'll give myself, let's say, 20 minutes to sit on TikTok and watch some videos. You know, I set a timer because I have to, because otherwise I could be on there for hours. And you know, if you're used to that, like these little TikTok videos where people are entertaining you or telling you something in 30 seconds, then, you know, if you're in a real conversation with someone, you're going to find yourself going like, could you get to the point? Could you get to the point? Like you're what do you want to say to me? Or that person's so boring. Or I have a young woman I'm working with right now who's dating someone, and she keeps saying to me, like, I feel like we're not doing enough. And I said, what does that mean to you? She goes, I don't know. Like, we're not like out all the time, you know, like, I don't know, like, you're supposed to be out doing these fantastic things every single night. And because when I talk to her, they are doing things a couple times a week. They're out. She's in New York City. They're out in the city. They're doing things. They're trying new whatevers, new restaurants or whatever. But there is some norm, you know, some usualness to the relationship too. There is some just, you know, coming home and hanging out. And I'm not saying you don't want to inject novelty into that. I'm not saying that you want to sit home every night and each be scrolling on your phones. That to me is a problem. But I can't tell you how many people I see out on their phones. I see it all the time. Well, Gary and I'll be having dinner and I'll look around and people, even the groups of young people especially, are all sitting at a table together on their phones. It's so detrimental, people. Like, please, please, I'm begging you. Even take 15 minutes to not be on your phone, photograph your food, do whatever you're going to do, and try to talk to each other. I mean, these are skills that are very important that are being rapidly lost. So think first. I'm not saying phones are evil. I have my phone. I love my phone. I'm saying think first. And when it comes to social media, again, isn't inherently evil, but be careful how much you're on there. Be careful how you feel after you get off. The research shows pretty consistently that over 20 minutes is a problem, and that just scrolling and not engaging with people is also a problem. Number two is mobile games, video games, games on your phone, games at your computer, games, you know, at your TV. It could be Candy Crush, Call of Duty, whatever. Games offer escalating rewards and intermittent reinforcement. So, you know, right? Loot boxes, achievements, levels, right? This taps into your brain's reward circuitry in really powerful ways. And, you know, I've had people report playing for hours without realizing it, skipping meals, losing sleep to keep going. Problem. Number three is definitely substance use, you know, alcohol and drugs, nicotine, alcohol, opioids, all trigger massive surges of dopamine. And unlike a natural reward, and don't talk to me about pot being natural or opiates being natural. I mean other things. Unlike natural rewards, like, you know, hunting for food, that's what I'm talking about. These substances, when you're doing a substance, they bypass your normal regulatory systems. That's the problem. And it leads to sort of a supernormal response. And over time, your brain becomes less sensitive to everyday rewards, which really contributes to addiction, to anhedonia. Anhedonia is really a lack of pleasure from things you used to enjoy. I see that a lot. And that's the issue. Or this dysregulation. My clients who were smoking pot all the time have become impossible. When they try to not smoke pot, they cannot deal with any stress at all. Any stress at all. This is not good. Pot should not be your answer to dealing with stress or alcohol or anything else. You should be able to emotionally regulate that on your own. And not have to be smoking pot all day, every day to be able to deal with people's upset or your own upset. Number four are definitely our dietary choices, right? High sugar, high fat foods, you know, chips, ice cream, fast food. They deliver very quick hits of pleasure and are often consumed mindlessly. And those foods really disrupt natural hunger cues. They reinforce emotional eating, and they definitely rewire taste preferences. There's a lot of foods that are happening here in the United States that are actually illegal or not sold in other countries for these purposes, for how they're actually hijacking your brain. Five is definitely sexual behavior. So again, watching excessive pornography, seeking constant novelty, newness in sexual encounters really dulls that natural arousal and intimacy. It can also obviously impact self-esteem, relationship satisfaction, and even impact sexual functioning, just so we're clear. And then number six is shopping and spending. So online shopping in particular is so dangerous. And trust me, this is probably my biggest thing I battle. Online shopping combines ease, novelty or newness, and reward. I it couldn't be worse for you. You know, you browse, you click, you get a package at your door. I mean, oh my gosh. I even think about, I remember way back when I would have to go buy a book, right? You have to go buy a book. And I love to read. Now, if I'm reading a book and then, and this has been happening for years, of course, but if I'm reading a book and I finish it and I'm like, oh, I want the next book in the series, if there's a series, I can do it right there. Literally in the middle of the night, I can have the next book. There's no waiting. There's no nothing. Do you see? There's a little, I know. So dopamine spikes every step of that way. Every step from the looking to the ease to the novelty, newness spikes dopamine to getting something at our door to the actual buying in the moment and then the getting it at your door. Oh my God. And for some, right, people have a lot of financial stress and compulsive buying. All kinds of things happen in relationship to that. How many people are living above their means or not, or putting those buys on a credit card or are buying things they don't really need? I will tell you, so here in the States, there's been a lot of boycotting of Target, stores like Target, Amazon, and which I have really been trying myself to take part in, right? Not buying things on Amazon. I know my books are sold on Amazon, so please go there for that right now because I don't have them somewhere else right now, but and I'm working on it. But in general, you know, like I would just think, oh, we need this. And I would just be on Amazon buying stuff all the time. And that's really stopped. Or I would always be in Target. I was always in Target. I was always buying Target. You missed out when I stopped shopping there. I have to tell you, I might single-handedly bring you down. I don't even know. So anyway, I'm not shopping at Target, certainly not like I used to. I was there the other day with my son, but I, in general, like I'm not in that store anymore. And I realize how much I used to buy that I'm not even just buying anymore. Like there's just things I'm not buying because I'm not wandering around that store. I'm not wandering around Amazon getting like, you know, hits about what I could get. It's incredible. I have really noticed the saving. I've noticed it. I've noticed that I'm saving money. That's how scary that is. I know. And I wasn't even aware. It's not like I thought I was overspending at Target. I mean, well, sometimes I knew it, but you know what I mean? In general, I wasn't like always coming home going, oh, what was I doing? I bought too much. I really wasn't. And now it's like, oh, I was. But again, we change our base levels. So give it a try. So let's talk about strategies for a behavioral reset. That's what we're looking to do. Okay. We're looking for strategies for a behavioral reset. That's how you change it in each of those domains. Okay. Because you've got to get practical. And a true dopamine detox, it's not about eliminating joy. It's about rebuilding a healthier relationship with stimulation. That's what you're trying to do. And you don't have to start at square zero to do that. You can just back up off of things a little. You don't have to think about complete abstinence. You don't have to think about going from 100 to zero, you know? So that's why I think this is good. So let's look at those six areas again, but let's have a new game plan, okay? Let's talk about it. So social media, the first thing I always say to people is do a social media audit. You know, you can use screen time apps to see where your attention goes. I would definitely unfollow accounts that leave you feeling anxious or not good enough. I think that's huge. You can do as part of your audit, you know, really look through what you do. Scheduling your use is also huge. You know, allocate a specific time. Like I mentioned, I literally set a timer because I know myself. 20 minutes, that's what I do. And you can do it whenever you want to look at social media. And that's it. And when it goes off, you have to be able to put that thing down. Avoid using it first thing in the morning, though, or late at night. So I'll tell you this, do not scroll right before bed. I know a lot of you are like, don't even that. If right now I'm telling you, don't use it first thing in the morning or right before bed or late at night, and you're noticing that you're upset by that, you think like, oh, I don't know about that, Abby. That means you need to change it. If I said to you right now, like, okay, I don't want you having broccoli anymore, you know, I want you to really watch your broccoli intake. I still say you can eat broccoli, but you just have to watch your intake. You have to be more thoughtful about what you would not even be blinking right now. Even if you love broccoli, I love broccoli, but I would not be blinking that I had to think about, okay, you only twice a week. All right, I can eat broccoli twice a week instead of five times a week. You wouldn't even think about it. But we talk about your phone or the social media. Notice what's happening. Okay. Notice what's happening. The other thing I always suggest is to remove temptation. You know, for sure you should have turn off any push notification. Keep the apps off your home screen. You know, you can delete them. I have a lot of clients who delete it completely from their phone and have to download it onto their phone every time they look. But the very least, don't have those things on your home screen. The very least. There's some research to show that using grayscale mode reduces the visual lure of the apps. So try grayscale mode on your phone. Could help. The other thing I say is replace the habit, you know? So if you're used to just picking up your phone and looking at social media, you know, looking, keep a book or journal near your phone. So there's another like default activity when the impulse to scroll strikes, okay? Have another impulse activity. So for example, maybe put a, you know, delete the apps from your phone and maybe put a book on your phone, like a fun book you want to read. So if you do pick up your phone, you're looking at the book, you're reading instead of that other thing. Carry around a magazine with you. I'm serious. Go subscribe to People Magazine or something. Carry one around. I will tell you the other day, by the way, I was at an appointment and there was People Magazine there or Us Magazine, one of those. And I was looking in there. I didn't know half the people. Talk about feeling old. I immediately felt very old. I did not know more than half, I would say, of the people that they were talking about. That I thought, I am so out of it. But anyway, the other thing I will tell you to do is not sleep with your phone near your bed. I can't stress this enough. Please stop. Please take the phone out of your bedroom. Yes, you can do it. Everybody can do it. Get a real alarm clock. They used to sell them. They still do. Trust me, because I have one. Get a real friggin' alarm clock and just charge your phone in the kitchen or somewhere else, in your office, somewhere else. Charge your phones, not where you sleep. At the very least, don't have them next to your bed. If you've got younger teenagers maybe and you take their phones at night and you can't keep them in a central area, I remember I used to do that and I couldn't keep things in a central area. I had like a little, one of those little stack things where I could like line them all up. And I did have it in this like corner of the bedroom. I kept it there so that they couldn't get to it. Although anywhere else they would have gotten up out of their beds at night and gotten the phones. So I did it that way. But be thoughtful. Don't sleep with it near your bed. Get a real alarm clock. It is so great to have a real alarm clock. I would really suggest getting one of those kind of Zen alarm clocks like I have, where the sound goes off quietly and then gets louder and louder. Because even you heavy sleepers, especially I would say you heavy sleepers, it's nice to have something just in the back trying to wake you up over time, pulling at your subconscious, pulling. Again, there's some research about this, not a lot, but there's some showing that those kinds, if you're a heavy sleeper, that those kind of alarms are actually better for you and help you wake up with more ease. It's also much nicer not to wake up to a jolt. I will tell you right now. So to kind of wake up in a sort of an easier way. Number two, so the mobile and video games, we said. So again, set clear limits. What do you do action plan wise? You set clear limits. Use, again, app timers, screen locks. You have to keep the gaming under control, okay? Keep it under control. Timers and screen locks, best way to go. Do not, I repeat, do not ever take your phone into the bathroom or have it out at meals, period. And this is good for actually all these, okay? Just don't have your phone in the bathroom. In the old days, we used to bring reading material in the bathroom, which is so funny. Is that just a Jewish thing? I want to know, in your house, was there like a magazine rack next to the toilet? Did you have that in your house? I would go into some homes and they didn't have anything in the bathroom, or there was like a book hidden somewhere. Because, yeah, I would snoop. or in my house, it was like a magazine rack. There was like tons of stuff to read. There was practically like a sign out wall at the library, you know? So I don't know how your family treated pooping in the bathroom and being in there, but leave your phone outside the bathroom. I really want you to do this for a while, period, end of. It will also help you with the pooping and not staying there too long. It's actually good for that whole, that all of that. If you like to listen to music in the bathroom, just don't for a while. Again, unless you can just listen to music in there through your phone and or leave your phone in the other room and have a speaker in the bathroom. So it's just not, again, right there, easy to access. And never have it out at meals. Never eat with it, even if you eat alone. Even if you eat alone. I would say if you eat alone, bring a book. It, you know, out at a restaurant or something. I used to always bring a book. I still do. A lot of times I just stare off into space when I'm eating alone, if I'm on a business trip or something. I like to eat alone. I have no, I don't know. I kind of like it. I like to people watch. It's such a great experience to give yourself to find comfort in just being your own company. Having a book when I was younger and cuter, I would always have a book so that people met. I love you men, but men would approach me quite a bit when I was alone out somewhere on business or whatever, or just out having dinner by myself, getting a respite from the family. So I would have a book. It would deter a lot of people from approaching me or staying if they did approach. But really, at least start there, right? So again, I'm not saying you can never have your phone with you. I'm not saying any of that stuff. I'm saying you can really look at not doing it there. And certainly if TV or something, don't watch TV and eat, anything like that. And really consider leaving your phone in your car or in another room when you're working so that you don't get on there and play games on your phone. Or, you know, the video gaming is always different because I think people do that at like a desktop usually, very different, or big TV screen, a big monitor, I should say, whereas the games on your phone, you know, it's wherever you bring your phone. So I'm talking about both. And I would definitely say another action thing is to switch up your rewards, you know, find less stimulating but still satisfying activities, you know, crossword puzzles, journaling. Build a Lego model. This is one of my favorites I've given to so many clients. Legos are the bomb. And get a Lego model. Spend your money on one. Spend $100. Get a really hard one. Do that at night instead. Take up crocheting or knitting or felting or some craft. Like, figure out something else to do in that time. Learn to meditate. Learn a language. Study a language in that time. I don't know. But do something else. I like the Lego and other stuff because at least it's still fun. And one of my clients, she builds the Lego sets and then she saves the boxes and the instruction and everything, and she resells them. So she puts them together, she keeps them for a while, and then she takes them all apart. She puts them all away in little plastic bags and labels everything. She does a really good job. And then she sells some, and others she keeps to rebuild at another time. And then again, like, it's like a crossword puzzle to her, or not a crossword, like a regular puzzle to her. She puts it together, then she takes it apart and puts it on a shelf and does it another time. It's a great idea. You don't have to just build and then leave some huge Death Star in your house, you know? You can build the Death Star and then take it apart and then build it again. Okay. And then one of the things that is getting a lot of play in the literature and in some of the research is to use gaming concepts, but for real life. So, you know, tracking your goals with streaks or with levels, rewarding yourself for completing chores or sticking to habits. You know, you can kind of gamify your personal life. If you want me to do a whole, I don't know if I can do a whole episode on that, but there's a ton of things you can do to gamify your personal life. You can ChatGPT that for yourself. I don't know if you want me to talk about it, let me know and I'll see if I can put it in somewhere. But it's, again, really effective and a great thing to do. Number three was the substance use, drugs or alcohol. So first things first there is to identify your triggers. You know, you can use a journal or one of those emotion tracking apps to track what emotions or situations push you towards substances. It doesn't take long to figure out what that is. Trust me, what your triggers are. You probably already know them off the top of your head. God knows. That's number one. Identify your triggers so you can put something else in there instead of that. Just like you would for social media or picking up your phone or anything else. Notice, oh, I always have a glass of wine as soon as I walk in my house or whenever I'm cooking dinner or, you know, whenever I try to go to sleep or notice when you do things and what those triggers are. Is it time of day? Is it boredom? Is it if you've eaten a certain thing? I used to smoke cigarettes whenever I drank coffee. I tried to quit cigarettes for years. I finally had to give it up with coffee. I had to let both of those go. I still don't really, I drink coffee very occasionally now, but it's not a thing I do. Because I couldn't drink coffee without wanting to smoke a cigarette. So think of that too, like swap things out. When I was quitting smoking, one of the harder things I did, I swear, I kind of joke, but it's the truth that it was easier to quit heroin than cigarettes. But one of the things I started doing, I learned very intricate needlepoint. Like it's called, what was it called? Cruel. It was called Cruel. It's like a type of needlepoint that's very intricate with different stitches and things. So I really had to focus on what I was doing. I made pillows for, if you knew me, back then in the 90s, you had a pillow, you know, you do, raise your hand, because I would needlepoint and then I would make them into a little pillow. I would needlepoint something for like a particular person and I'd make it into a pillow and I'd give it to friends. I'm sure they threw them away because they weren't that good, but, anything like that is great. It's really, and that's part of my next suggestion, which is swapping rituals. You know, so instead of, you know, having coffee, you know, or a cigarette, I mean, I would start to, you know, that idea whenever I got bored or I was getting antsy, I would start, you know, if you want to knit or crochet or whatever your thing is. Or you could replace that glass of wine with a nightly walk, with a mocktail, with a relaxing playlist, you know, switch it out. Obviously seek help if you need to. If moderation's too hard, you know, work with someone who's trained, a therapist trained in maybe cognitive behavioral therapy or addiction, you know, treatment. You don't have to go into treatment necessarily, but it'd be good to get professional help if this is really a problem to moderate on your own. Okay. That's a whole other episode. I'm not going to get into diagnosing you right now or anything like that, but and there are medication-assisted therapies that could help also. Again, you need professional help to get those, okay, to access that kind of thing. All right. Number four is your dietary choices. And I would say first and foremost is to start eating mindfully. Take at least one meal a day to eat without your phone, without distractions. Make it, even if you don't usually sit for like quote-unquote meals, I would take your food, sit down, because that's the problem, right? You're sort of eating on the run or doing whatever. I don't care if it's cheese and crackers. Sit down and eat. Just sit down and eat. Sometimes I do this in my kitchen now that the kids are gone, you know, like when I'm having a snack, I'm saying to you, I love to like make a little charcuterie board. Like I'll do that all the time with, I always have little things in my house that I could eat that way. I'll cut up a pickle. And so I lay it all out and there's a like a bar area in the kitchen. I will often sit there for a minute. Sometimes I'll even stand because I sit a lot during the day, but I'm standing kind of on purpose, mindfully. And I'll just eat standing there and just enjoying my food. Just enjoying, no phone, no distraction. There's no TV on. There's no nothing. Just notice the flavors, the textures, how full you feel, how good it eats going down. You know, I get really good cheese. Is there any, God, good cheese is good, isn't it? Now you want cheese. You're sitting there right now. I'm salivating right now. I know. It's my own fault. Okay. Plan better snacks. I just thought of that. Like that's part of this, right? Stock up on options that offer nutrition, but also that satiate you. So don't just have, I don't know, rye crisps if you don't like those, right? Shout out to my Finnish folks or my Danish folks out there listening, my Swedish folks. You know, I don't know what those rye bread, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I like those, but a lot of people don't. And if you don't eat, you know, start somewhere, eat nuts. Nuts are like my favorite. And I go to Trader Joe's here and I make my own nut mix myself because I really like their roasted salted almonds and I get roasted salted cashews and I get pistachio nuts and I mix them together. I like it that way. Shouldn't I be eating the raw almonds unsalted? Yes. But would I have those as often as a snack? No. And I have low blood pressure, so I don't have a problem with salt. Salt actually helps me, helps keep my electrolytes balanced. I eat salt. For me, it's okay. So, but I'll eat a ham. Gary will too. Come home from work. I have a big jar where I keep the nuts, the nut mix. I like to mix it myself because that's really the only, I always end up with hazelnuts or something in there, Brazilian nuts, things I don't eat so much. So anyway, do whatever works for you. If you have to put some chocolate in there, do that. If you have mostly nuts with a little chocolate, you know, whatever works. Some Greek yogurt, if you like that. Fruit, vegetables cut up. I cut up veggies and I have high fat dressing with it. I do. But again, I'll eat that and it's really satisfying. It tastes really good to me. And I'll eat it with some protein, you know, or I'll have an apple with peanut butter, a little cinnamon on there. Love it. Have some good things around. If all I had around were, we have bags of chips in my house and other things, but if I didn't have those other things accessible, I would go right to the chips. And sometimes I have the chips, don't get me wrong, but I eat them sort of after I've had nuts or after I've had something else. So I eat a lot less of them and I can have a handful and be cool. So, but you have to know you, just be thoughtful. I'm just giving you examples of my silly life, but really be mindful no matter what. If you haven't downloaded my mindfulness starter kit yet, my free mindfulness starter kit yet, you're killing me here. Download it. Come on. It's below the video. It's everywhere. You need mindfulness is at the core of everything I teach. There is nothing more important that you're going to do. You can't do anything I am saying today without being mindful because you get on autopilot and next thing you know, you've been on your phone for an hour. You need to work on mindfulness because you will train your brain. There's that neuroplasticity in a good way. You can train your brain to actually remind you, hey, you've been on the phone, your phone for an hour. What are you doing? It will interrupt your thoughts. It'll help you. It's like your inner being, you know, gets trained in this other way. It'll help you do better. I promise. I promise. I guarantee it'll help you. So make sure you're really working on your mindfulness no matter what else. Remember, it's not the same as self-awareness. You might be sitting there, I'm very self-aware. I don't care. Mindfulness is different. It is being in your moments non-judgmentally and noticing how you're feeling, what you're doing, how it's going, and being 100% aware of all of that and not on autopilot. You know, you're usually on autopilot all day long. You kind of wake up in your day, not good. So you got to change that first. So download the kit. For full transparency, if you download anything that I offer for free, you will be placed on my love letter list. It's my email list, which you will never, ever get sold anything. You will never get bombarded with emails. What you will get is twice a month, you will get my love letter, which I call Love Bites because it's the twice a month version, which is just meant to inspire you for the week. That's it. People love this thing. You should love this thing. I put a lot of love and heart into it, and it's just meant to inspire you. Take 5 minutes to read it every week. It'll just sort of help you stay on track. Think about something different. I don't know. And if you want to get it every week, if you love it so much, you can pay $19.99 for the year. You can prepay that for 1 year and you get a free course that I sell for $19.99. So anyway, and you get it weekly instead of twice a month. But I'm not going to sell you anything. I'm not going to bombard you. It's truly meant just to help. The other thing you can do is acknowledge your emotional eating. So in other words, so before eating, you would ask yourself if you're actually hungry or if you're feeling something else. Why am I eating right now? Am I bored? Am I sad? Am I stressed? And then you can choose what to do. I check in sometimes and I realize I'm a little bored, but I still eat. Oh, well, you know, at least I'm aware. I do find that I eat less when I do that. And a lot of times, though, I am able to say no. Let me take a sip of water. A lot of times it really helps me when I stop and acknowledge like, oh, you're not really hungry, Abby. I'll kind of walk away and do something else. Okay. All right. Number 5, sexual behavior, right? That's this other thing. So I would say for sure to take a break from porn, for sure, internet porn, any kind of porn you're using, or dating apps even for 1 to 2 weeks. And really track how your body and relationships feel. Okay. Start tracking. Get rid of that outside stuff and just start to notice. Journal if you want. Track it if you want with like an emotion tracker or something else, or just writing notes in your phone. How your body feels. How your relationships feel. How much do you think about sex? How much do you not think about sex? How much are you drawn to want to get on a dating app? You know, to get that hit, get that dopamine hit. That's what that is. So do that. And then I really want you to look at rebuilding real intimacy in your life. So if you're partnered, you know, you would prioritize eye contact, prioritize conversation, physical connection, right? Like a slower physical connection. You would prioritize that over novelty or performance or length or, you know, frequency. If you're not in a relationship romantically, look at your other relationships. And again, you know, all relationships need intimacy, you know, that emotional closeness. I shouldn't say all relationships, sorry. All of our personal relationships, work relationships need transparency and honesty and other things. They certainly don't necessarily need emotional closeness, but your other relationships, prioritize them, work on them, really pay attention. Focus on emotional connection everywhere. So explore other forms of affection, you know, cuddling, cooking together, writing notes to each other. I don't know. Could be a bunch of things, right? Other than what you're doing. But it's really about taking the time for an audit of how you're doing, of what's happening. And with today's episode, as I do with all the episodes, if this is all really hitting for you, I'm going to offer a bundle of all the worksheets, all of the things that I offer to my Patreon community for that they get included with their tiers and what they already pay. You can buy it all for $8. So if you want to, if this is a problem for you and you want to figure out how to do this, I have a challenge in there. I've got all kinds of things. Wait till the very end and I'll list all the things that my community gets and you can make an informed decision whether or not you might want to buy the bundle for today's episode or not. Number six is shopping and spending. Shopping and spending. So definitely have a waiting period. Don't buy non-essentials for 24 hours. I will tell you, often the urge passes. So I do a lot of shopping and not buying. My thing always is I will go on shopping sites, and I have many of them, and I'm a fashion girly. I really like my stuff. But I will go on, and it's always my rule that I'm not allowed to buy. I'm looking to shop. I have certain times when I'm allowed to buy that I allow myself to buy because I have a budget, you know, and I sort of have that all worked out for myself with when I'm buying things. But I shop a lot. I like things on websites. I go, I like, you know, I heart them because I have an account. And then my thing is I go back through the heart. I will tell you, I heart so many things. And then when I go back through weeks later or a week later or a month later, whatever it is, or even a day later, I often unheart so many of those things because they were hitting me in a moment and they're not hitting me now. The things that really stand the test, like, oh, I still love that. Oh, I'm still obsessed with that. Oh, I still think that's great. Then later, I'm looking at whether or not, does that really fit in my wardrobe? Is that something I really, you know, want to have? Am I just buying another black shirt or another black pair of shoes? You know, like, what is this bringing to my life? Do I need this? That's kind of where I'm getting. And I'm getting older now, so I'm trying to really be thoughtful about what I bring in as far as clothing, accessories, and things because, you know, like, I don't know. Like, how much stuff do I need? But I do enjoy my fashion. So I'm finding new spaces for that. I hope you are too, but really think of, and even with quote unquote essentials, like when I was buying things on Amazon, I would always have a waiting period and not just go on, you know, the buy now button, try to not do that. And I'm telling you, the urge passes a lot. You look back later and you're like, oh, I don't even need that. We have this other thing I can use instead, you know, or something like that. Try to have cash only days. We know from the research that any kind of friction helps slow down impulsive buying. So if you have $100 for allotted for groceries and you bring $100 in cash instead of using your debit card or credit card, what happens is when you're in the store, you have to be very mindful and thoughtful. There's a lot of friction here, right? about what you're buying. Because if you have $100, you know, if you're saying I can't spend more than $100 on groceries and the groceries come to $106.84, you're probably not going to put something back. You're like, ah, it's $6 over. That's the problem. When you have $100 to spend, I guarantee you with cash, you will spend less. Of course, it'd be very hard to hit 100 exactly. You will start to say no to those things that you don't, that you're like, oh, especially at Trader Joe's. I got Trader Joe's, you get me every time. You know, I'm like, ooh, what do they have new? Let's try this. Let's try that. And that's fine to a degree, but I can definitely get carried away. And so it stops me. I do this often. I use cash only often. I'm a cash girly. I like having cash. I use cash a lot. It helps me stay pretty honest. And that helps me because I'm someone who, this is one of my bigger issues, the buying things. So spending money. So it really helps all the things I'm recommending, of course, are not just things I use on me. These all come from the research, which is why I use it on me, and things I use with my clients that are consistently effective. So anyway, I'm just talking about me today. I don't know why. But anyway, definitely, you know, when the desire to buy strikes, the other thing you can do, and I have a lot of clients do, I tell them to tidy up instead. Okay? Spend 10 minutes organizing a drawer or cleaning your space or cleaning off your desk. That kind of stuff grounds you and definitely reminds you of what you already have. And it's a great way to not spend. Go do this other thing. I'm telling you, it's very effective. I would say that's one of the things my clients come back to again and again saying, oh my God, that was so good, Abby. That really helped. I don't know why. I don't know how, but it did. All right. So let's wrap this up. Let's wrap this baby up. I want to wrap up by saying that dopamine is not the villain. It's the messenger. Ooh, that was good. I'm going to repeat it if I can. Dopamine isn't the villain. It's the messenger. It's what drives us to survive. It drives us to connect, to create. But when every moment in your life is packed with synthetic highs, you start to lose your ability to focus, to find meaning, and to regulate your emotions. And that's when it's time for a reset. That's when it's time. You don't need to move to the woods or meditate in a cave. You want to pause, reflect, and shift your habits with intention. And you can call it a dopamine detox, a behavioral reset, a tech break. I don't personally care. What matters is you got to create a space for stillness, for depth, and the kind of joy that doesn't, you know, disappear the second, you know, you're swiping away from something. That's what I want you to do. Okay. I think that's it for today. I mean, that's all I got. I always have more to say, but that's all I'm going to say on this topic. Stick around if you want to hear everything that's included for the Patreon community. And if you want to buy the bundle for this, if you want to go deep, I always think of it as like a kind of a masterclass for every episode. If this is an episode that really hits home for you, if this is something and you don't want to join the community, which I think you should, but if you don't want to, that's cool. But you want to go much deeper, do some journaling, some worksheets, you know, really go there, then this bundle's likely for you. So let's get into it. And definitely remember to download the Mindfulness Starter Kit if you haven't already. That's free. So Tier one, or the inner circle of my One Love Collective, my Patreon online community, is getting a 7-day behavioral reset challenge. They're getting journaling prompts that I'm calling like discovering your dopamine triggers. Tier two, which is my love accelerator, they're getting obviously everything in tier one, plus build your low dopamine routine, like a way to do that. They're getting the dopamine overdrive quiz, a little quiz to see where you're at with this. They're getting a dopamine audit, you know, what's draining your focus and joy, okay? And then tier three is getting everything in tier one and two, and they're getting a different journaling. It's like, I call it journaling your way back to meaning, you know, sort of, it's a different level of journaling. They're getting a dopamine shift tracker, 30 days to clarity, calm, and real joy. Okay. So that you really have like a 30-day out to hopefully create truly a new habit in that time. And that's it. I know. So thank you again to my One Love Collective for coming up. I don't remember who it was. I'm sorry. It should give you some props, but for bringing this topic here. I think it's a brilliant one, and I'm so happy I did it. As always, I always learn on the way, or at least get to organize my thoughts differently, which means a lot to me and helps my clients, helps my people in the collective. When I'm talking, I have my thoughts more organized, and certainly helps my own life, which is why I'm the luckiest person in the world getting to do this podcast with you for all these years. It's amazing. We are getting close to closing out the 7th season. By the time you're listening to this, it should be sometime in May. And, you know, July is when I end the season. So, and I'll be starting year 8 of the podcast. Unfriggin' believable. Thank you. Yeah. I'm overjoyed and overwhelmed with love for you in such a really wonderful way. Overwhelmed in a good way. And how much I appreciate and, I'm grateful for our connection. Okay. Have an amazing week. Mwah. I love you so much. Be kind to yourself, good to others, and I'll speak to you real soon.
Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful, confident. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi, let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything, you can email me at abby@abbymedcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy, crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymedcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.